This is Purple Radio on demand.
Hello everyone, bonjour à tous, ciao à tutti, and welcome back to Bon Voyage, Purple Radio's Year Abroad podcast. Thank you so, so much for all the love that you've given me on my last podcast and on our first episode. It's just been so amazing. It's been so heartwarming seeing people enjoying the podcast, seeing the reaction from everyone who's listened in so far. I'm just so thankful for everyone who has taken the time to tune into my little podcast and hear what it's like to be a year abroad student. So thank you so much. And if you haven't heard our first episode yet, you can check it out on the Purple Radio On Demand Spotify page, which is the same page on which you can find this episode. So if you just look back, or if you search on Spotify, Bon Voyage Purple Radio, you'll be able to see our first episode. And so today's topic is going to be, again, about the year abroad and the experience of the year abroad. But this week we're going to be talking about a bit more of a serious note, because I found that when I was preparing for my year abroad, it was really, really easy to look at and hear about the positive things of a year abroad, the positive side, the trips, the parties, the side of living in Italy or just living abroad in general, which makes your time away from Durham feel like you're on a year-long holiday. But really, like, the year abroad goes way, way beyond that. And I have found from my experience that as much as it is an amazing time, it can be one of the best times of your life, it can also be one of the most challenging. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I am adoring my year abroad so far. I've made amazing friends, I've had such wonderful experiences, but nobody really talks about the other side, where you might feel lonely, anxious, you might be struggling in general. And so that isn't what you want to show to others. But today I'm going to be real with you. I'm going to speak about the tougher times of the experience and share an insight about how the year abroad is balanced. It can be both an amazing time and it can also be a really difficult time. And the two things don't have to be separate. You can be having an amazing time doing one thing, and then the exact same day you see something and you feel terrible and you feel like you wish you were back in Durham. Because that's the reality of a year abroad and the turbulence of it and how quickly things can change and how much of a difference it is from the life that you might be used to back home. And I mean, I think the biggest struggle of a year abroad is just missing Durham. I mean, I expected that I'd been missing Durham, so I put a lot of effort into hanging out with my friends, especially at the very end of second year. I had some amazing times with people because I knew that I wouldn't be having those same experiences with the same people this year. But it's still really hard missing Durham, missing your friends back home, and just the feeling of loneliness that you can feel while here, away from Durham, while your friends are having fun. Because when, as I said, when I left Durham at the end of last year, I had quite a large group of friends, and I only know a handful who are going to be there when I return for my fourth year. And I mean, of course I'm going to make new friends, and I'm going to solidify the friendships that I have with those who will be there when I'm back. But it can be difficult being so far away from Durham, especially if you're the only person in your friendship group on a year abroad, or there's not a lot of your friends in your friend group who are away from Durham this year. Because you see your closest friends going out to party together, you see societies that you absolutely love participating in, going on socials, or even just seeing like society meetings. I'm part of a sports team and I sometimes feel like FOMO. I feel like sad when I see them going to practice or just anything like that, because it's just the whole fear of missing out. It's the whole feeling of I'm not there doing something that I love, even though I'm here in Italy also doing something that I love. It's a really, really weird feeling. And even events such as Freshers Week and Winter Ball, as much as you might be having an amazing time doing just as many social events wherever you are in the world, I mean, I basically had a second Freshers Week here with the ESN, with the Erasmus Student Network. But like, even with these, even if you have equivalents of these events, it's so strange, it's so sometimes sad looking on at family events from the outskirts. And I don't know, I guess it's something that sticks around. But the biggest advice that I feel like I would give to anyone who feels similar, and something that's actually reassured me as well, is to remember that all these things will still be there when you come back from your time away from Durham. And your friends back home aren't forgetting about you. They haven't suddenly turned on you, or they don't, like, they haven't forgotten your existence just because you're abroad. Like, you should keep in touch with them, sending a message, or if they send a message to you, it can be nice to have a little catch up and chat, because your friends are still your friends, even if you've got distance between you. And I know that FOMO hurts. I experience it pretty much every single day, and it's a very, very real part of your time abroad. But I've learned in the 2.5 months that I've been here that you can't let it take over the experience that you're having to live, study and work abroad. Because you can see the glitz and glam of nights out, college balls, society events, etc. But you don't see the other side of uni that you've experienced in the first 2 years, such as like the 2 a.m. Billy B breakdowns, dissertation stress, exam and essay stress, other things like that. Just like you're not going to share the hard times of your year abroad with most people who follow you on Instagram. So it's so, so important to keep in contact with people. And I think the biggest thing I would say is that you shouldn't let the missed activities from being abroad make you miss out on enjoying your time abroad. And even at university abroad, there are going to be ways that you can make friends. You can join any clubs or societies that there might be available. Even if it's just the ESN or just the International Student Network, I found here in Modena, there's been so many opportunities to meet some incredible people. Some of which you've actually heard on the podcast, or you will hear on the podcast, because I'm inviting them to come and talk to you guys. And another big worry and another big struggle of the year abroad that I've personally found, and that's hit me quite hard, is finances and budgeting, especially when it comes to, as I've already mentioned, FOMO, fear of missing out, and like missed experiences within your host country itself. Because FOMO doesn't just hit when you're looking back at Durham, it also hits when your friends are doing something and you maybe can't afford it. Because I know I speak quite a lot about all the travelling that happens on a year abroad and the places that I've visited so far, but like at the same time, these trips can be really, really costly. And when you're on your year abroad, budgeting is so, so crucial. And it's something that I've struggled with, because in my first and second year of university, I had a job. I would go every week and I would make money. And so I'll admit, I didn't really learn how to budget like I should have. And that's hit me quite hard since coming to Italy. But I'd say that from my own experience, the biggest advice that I would give regarding this topic is the fact that, just like you might say no to a night out in Durham, it's okay to say no to things. I know it's hard to believe, or like I've felt like this sometimes, but people aren't going to like you any less for prioritising yourself and your budget. You're still going to have an amazing time on any opportunity that you do say yes to. And honestly, in your local area, when it comes to travelling, you might find things that are just as exciting in the city in which you're staying. You don't need to go far away to have a good time, and it might help save you money and help you enjoy your experience even more. Like, I know that one thing I had to learn when I came here to Italy is that I'm here to live, not just a holiday. And I've had a lot of fun, but it's been so, so important to learn how to pace myself. It's been hard, but it's been so important to learn how to take life at a calmer speed and just to learn to enjoy living, not just existing and staying in Modena. Like, enjoying the mundane things. It's been something that, even a year abroad, it's something that makes you feel proud. Like, speaking to a supermarket staff member in your target language, even experiences just such as getting a cheap coffee with your friends and having a chat for a few hours. Not every experience that you have in your year abroad needs to be costly or touristic or anything like that. You can have a good time while saving money. And I know money is a very difficult topic to talk about, but if you're worrying about money on your year abroad, or you're a second year that is considering going on a year abroad and you're worried about the financial aspect of it, I would suggest looking into things such as scholarships or bursaries, which are provided by the university, schemes such as the Turing Grant as well. And if you're an MLEC student, one thing that I have to consider, and that I'm actually doing, is considering the possibility of working abroad rather than studying, because I know that study abroad is so romanticised, and I know that I speak a lot about studying abroad in this podcast because it is my current reality, but I would have loved to study in both Italy and France, but I realised that I needed to earn money for the other half of my year abroad, earn money during my other half, I mean. So actually, in the second half of my year abroad, starting from March, I'm going to be taking up a teaching internship rather than studying. And there are opportunities for so much more than just studying and going to university abroad, including things such as industry placements, teaching. There's so much more than just the part in universities. So if you're a second year and you're worried about the financial side of a year abroad, I'd suggest looking into the idea of getting an internship abroad. Or if you really want to study, you can have a look at things such as the Turing Grant and different scholarships and bursaries, because a year abroad can be really, really costly and it can be really hard to budget. But even if you're like working abroad, you're still using the language, you're still learning your language, you're still speaking it on a day-to-day basis, but you're also earning money at the same time, which is something that can really help you and can take a lot of the financial pressure off you. And I guess that the key point of my talk today, though, and my biggest advice to anyone listening in who is worried about the like more negative side of a year abroad, is that it's okay to struggle. It's a normal thing. You're not the only one. Going abroad, living away from familiarity, and just navigating life through a completely, completely different lens than what you're used to, it's hard for even the most well-traveled people. And I experience it even now, but there will be times where you just want to go back to the comfort of home. You're not the only one who feels this way. And things such as speaking to your friends, family, or other trusted people can help you lessen the homesickness. And I mean, something that I've done, which I would suggest to others, is it might also be worth bringing some small comforts from home with you. Like, for example, to Italy, I brought a couple of things, including a framed photo of myself with some of my closest friends. I brought my favourite mug. I've got a teddy bear, which means a lot to me. And the funniest thing I think that I brought with me to Italy is a giant box of Yorkshire tea bags, which I think I'm only probably about a 12th of the way through. But every time I have a cup of tea, it just reminds me of home. And small things that remind you of familiar settings can help with feelings of homesickness, and it can help you remember that you're not alone. You can reach out to people if you're struggling. It's so important to talk about your feelings. If you get in contact with your college's welfare team, they'll be able to direct you to the university counselling service, where you can access the university counselling service even if you're on a year abroad. And one thing I'd also say is just making sure you have a support system in place before leaving, because it can be a really, really tough time, but it's also a very rewarding time. But you need to make sure that you know how to manage and you know how to deal with emotions and feelings of negativity and sadness and frustration when the bad times come around. And it's incredibly common. It's so, so common to struggle while abroad. So I promise you guys that you're not alone. Someone will always be willing to listen to you. And there are always things that can help while you're on your year abroad, no matter what situation you find yourself in. So on our episode of Bon Voyage today, I have another one of my French friends joining me. Welcome to the podcast, Théo.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, Théo. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? Who are you? Where are you from? And what do you study?
So my name is Théo. I'm from France, Strasbourg. I study in Angers, France. This is in the west part of France. I'm 20 years old and I study English, such as literature, history, and phonetics.
Oh, very interesting.
It is.
Because in the UK, obviously we have English as our native language, so
True.
it's probably a lot different than how you study English in France.
It is very different.
How's your course in France? Like, how does it run? Like, is it 3 years, 4 years? How is an English course in France?
So basically, what I'm doing is 3 years, then I have a master's degree, 2 years. It's n a bit different from English from England because I've got some professors from Birmingham, and she told us that the lessons, such as phonetics and grammar, are extremely different because we have to do everything because we're not natives, so we don't have like the basics. So we have to start from scratch and do sometimes a bit weird exercises, but honestly they're pretty useful. But in a general way, I would say that because I've learned some people who were studying in the UK, and the courses aren't that different. So yeah.
And I mean, I'm a French student, I study French, and so it's probably quite similar to how I learn French is how you learn English at
English, yeah.
university. So like, what's your favorite thing about studying English like?
The great thing I love about studying English is that English is extremely, how do I say it? It's like a huge number of possibilities of work, of meeting people. English is like, so yeah.
Yeah, very nice. And I mean, it's quite. I really like the flexibility of doing a modern languages degree because I find that whenever I'm talking to, say, family members or friends and they ask me what I want to do in the future, sometimes it feels a bit weird saying that I don't know because my degree doesn't necessarily lead to a job directly. But also, I like that flexibility. Like, is
Yeah.
that quite similar in France? Do you just have the flexibility to choose what kind of job you want afterwards with an English degree?
No, that's completely different because if you do like me, an English degree, and then you follow with a master's degree, which is even more specific because with a master's degree, you can just do like teacher or professor or even translator. But the number of jobs you can do is quite small. But if you just do like a normal degree, a 3 years degree, you can do many jobs, but they're not, how to say it, like important jobs, if I can say it that way. So I feel it's the great difference between France and UK because if you are studying a specific field, you have to work in this specific field. No way it can be different.
Are you considering to come, like, are you considering like coming to the UK and working in the UK after your degree or?
Yeah, definitely. Because in France, we've got this, in Europe, I mean, we've got this program when we go to another country, such as the UK. So what I can do is go to UK, teach in British schools or Scottish schools, and it's a bit different from teaching because it's just like helping the teacher, helping the students. But for me, it's like a huge opportunity because it's something that is create that is managed by the European Union. And for me, having this kind of opportunity is like extremely rare for my career. And I really encourage people to do this because when people enter master's degrees for teaching, they have no idea how to teach. So it's like a sort of introduction and a smooth introduction to this master's degree and profession.
Interesting. And have you had any thought about where in the UK you'd want to go?
Definitely the north.
Yes, big up the north, big up the north.
I will, because one of the main major problem I've heard in the UK is the price of living. So I know that the south is definitely really expensive. Even though we've got a salary, which is honestly really good, I don't want to spend too much money living in the UK. I want also to travel because if I want to go to the UK, I want to visit the UK, not just teach and work and do all of this stuff. So, and I've heard from Charlotte and all of the students that the north of the UK, especially the region around Manchester, Sheffield, York, Durham are slightly less expensive. So for me, it's a huge point. And it looks really amazing. I mean, I've seen the photos, I've seen videos of landscapes, of castles and cities. This is wonderful. I love this kind of region. I just fell in love with
I mean, we're on a mission to get you to visit Durham at least once,
I
even just to
will.
see Durham
I
Cathedral.
will, I will, definitely.
And so you said that you're from Strasbourg, but you study in Angers.
Yeah.
Why did you choose to move to the other side of the country rather than staying in your like local university? Because when I was chatting with Manon last week, she was telling me that she studies at her local university in Rouen. Why did you choose to go to Angers and live away from home rather than staying in Strasbourg?
So the answer is really easy because I've lived all my life in Strasbourg, all my life in this region, and after the COVID, I wanted to like break free, if I can say this. I really wanted to discover another part of France I've never been to. Before studying in Angers, I've never been to Angers in my life, and I barely knew what the city was. So when I got here, I was a bit lost, but at the same time, I felt so comfortable and proud of myself moving to another region that I don't know. And the city is really lovely. I mean, it's one of the most peaceful and calm cities you can find in France. And the degrees and the master's degrees here have a sort of good reputation compared to the rest of France. So I have no regrets moving to the West. But I have to say that even I didn't want to go to Strasbourg. The university there is really, really good. We have got good professors. I know them because I've met some of my friends who study English, every field you can possibly believe of. So Strasbourg is amazing, but when you live there your whole life, you just want to try something else.
And that's how I feel about moving away from my little town, yeah, Manchester, moving up to Durham, because it's a big thing just having a fresh start. And I mean, that's a sentiment that's also echoed in coming to Italy and doing
Definitely.
Erasmus. So why did you choose to come to Italy? Why did you choose to come to Modena?
So basically, I wanted to go to Greece for an Erasmus, but I've only been accepted for one semester in Greece. And when I talk about this situation with my professor, he told me that there was a free spot in Italy, which was my second choice. So I considered the opportunity, and I really wanted to try Italy because a semester abroad in Italy is much better than just a semester in France. So I wanted to just discover, but I didn't really think about my choice. I just said like, let's go. And I don't regret it. Like Italy and Modena is a really great place, and all of the cities I visited in Italy are amazing. Amazing.
What's been your favorite like trip that you've done out in Italy? Like, what's been your favorite part about being in Italy and
Oh, what I really loved about Italy is traveling, definitely, but also meeting new friends, new people. What I've really loved about Modena is that you can find every nationality. I mean, not only Europe, but also Asia, Africa, and America. So when we talk to these people, you realize that your life is so different from the others, and sometimes when you're in your home country, you just feel like, oh, my home country is so bad, I hate it, I just want to leave. But when you talk to some people and you realize the good sides of your country and what they've said about their country, you just realize how much you love your country. So for me, it's like going to an Erasmus in Italy was a way to discover myself, but also discovering what I really like, and I really like my country, France.
And I know that since I've come to Italy, I've kind of had a bit of like not nostalgia as such, but like I've started missing the UK a lot more. I've been missing the tiny things. I've been missing going to Wetherspoons, which is like if you come to the UK, Teo, you are going to experience Wetherspoons. It's like a big chain of bars,
Oh,
and they're known for
really?
being really cheap, and they've got good food as well.
Ooh.
So I've been missing Wetherspoons. I've been missing Greggs, which is quite funny because I worked there for a year and a half, and I never thought I'd miss it, but sometimes my heart just longs for a steak bake.
Totally agree. Actually, right now I miss my country. I miss the small things. As you said, I miss my family, I miss my pets, I miss my friends, and also I miss the food. I mean, Italy is the best country to get the best food you can get in your life. But in my region and in my country, we've got some food, which like the tarte flambée or flammenkuchen. We've got pretzels, we've got also a traditional meal called choucroute. It's very traditional from my region. And I really, really missed it. And I've never missed it in my entire life. And I'm in Italy eating gelato and spaghetti every week. So, yeah, I really miss it. And I feel also a sort of nostalgia when I think about it. So, definitely.
Do you think that being here in Italy makes you, like, appreciate home more?
Definitely, definitely. I really want to go back home. I just feel comfortable in my own country, you know. I'm really proud to live in this country, and I'm really thankful for everything I've got here.
Okay, so you've mentioned about like your favourite things about Italy, like the food and the travelling, but what do you think is the most difficult thing about Erasmus?
Definitely paperwork. We've got to subscribe for the courses, and it's really difficult because we have to find courses that can be the courses we have in France, but it's really difficult because you don't really have the same courses, and also the mental charge we receive from the administration to complete every paperwork on time with a lot of paperwork to fill. And it's really stressful because I have another semester in Erasmus next in February, and I've got so many paperwork to do. It's really, really stressful because we're just 20, so we're a bit lost. We don't have our parents with us all the time. So that's the worst part of it. But once you finish this, you're so happy because you know you will have a great experience in the country.
Yeah, I relate. Like over summer, I spent so much time preparing for my visa because since the UK is no longer in the European Union, we have to get a visa to enter Italy for over 90 days. And as soon as we landed in Italy, I had to go and apply for my permesso di soggiorno, which is like the British residency permit. And so it was just a lot of paperwork being thrown at you all the time, appointments being thrown at you, payment for this, payment for that, payment to like stay in Italy. And it's just such a surreal experience. Like it feels like you're an adult for the first time.
Yeah, definitely.
Because like even up to like enrolling in university, you had your parents there like supporting you and helping you to like choose a university or prepare your application or things like that. But since coming to Italy, I've found that it's made me a lot more independent because I've had to navigate a lot of these things by myself. Have you found the same thing since coming to Italy?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, before I had to do also some paperwork by myself for the university because I didn't live with my parents anymore. But this is so different. And I just don't really like the way they just give us the paperwork. And I don't have the visas, but I know I will have to do it if I go to the UK. So I'm already a bit scared for it. But yeah.
So you said that you're going to Greece after this for another period of Erasmus. Why did you choose to go to Greece, and like, what are your plans? What are you doing? Where are you studying? Do you know Greek?
No, I don't know Greek, sorry. I don't even know the alphabet. But what I really wanted to go to Greece is, first of all, with my university, we've got a lot of places available for students to go there. So it's a huge opportunity. Since we don't have the UK anymore, which is a huge shame. And what I really want to discover in Greece is the history of Greece, because they've got such a huge history, and also the ruins, the palaces, I mean, and the cats. I know they've got a lot of cats
everywhere.
In the streets. I love stray cats, so I know what I did, and also I have to say it for the good weather also, because
I mean, you're gonna be there in summer. When are you there from? From like February
till the end of June, early July maybe. So it's gonna be a huge period for me, And I can't wait. I just can't wait.
Do you think that being here in Italy is going to help you with your confidence when you go to Greece because you've already experienced an Erasmus?
Yeah, definitely, because this is the first time I leave everything behind. I mean, my family, I really left them for a huge period of time, for me, I mean. And I know how I felt for the first time, for the first weeks being alone here in a country that doesn't speak my language. So I'm kind of prepared, and also what is really reassuring me for this next Erasmus is that I know some girls who are in the same university as me coming to Greece, whereas here I know no one. There was only one place available for one semester, so I was the only one. No help from the university or the students. Yeah, I feel prepared.
But I mean, you're here now, you've got loads of friends, you're going out to like trips and stuff. We went to Venice with our friends the other week, which was amazing. And you were talking about how you've got like all the history and culture in Greece that you really want to visit, but you've also seen that in Italy.
Yeah, I mean, the culture in Italy, I think we all have this image of Italy being a huge country concerning culture. But when you arrive there, you just realize how big it is. Like, you can find it even in the smallest churches of the smallest cities and villages. I mean, I was shocked when I discovered that some churches are in Italy, in the smallest cities, have so much details in it. It feels so dreamy to have those churches in such small villages. They put so much effort to keep the culture they have, because they know they have a huge culture and that they have to protect it because it's really, really precious.
And like, I remember when we went to the Burano Island in Venice, yes. And it's a really small island, but it was so beautiful. And we went into the church and it was just stunning. Like,
Yeah. You're
just surrounded by so much like history and just culture here, and I'm just...
And art also,
art,
yeah.
Art, yes, it's so...
Paintings everywhere.
Yeah.
And also what I really like about Italy is that people only think about the Tower of Pisa to be a leaning city. A leaning tower. But you can find leaning towers everywhere in Italy. Like in Modena, we've got a tower and it's leaning. In Burano, the tower was leaning, and a lot. I mean, it was not just 1 or 2 degrees, you could see it with your bare eyes.
You just need a collection of leaning towers of Italy.
Yeah, and you've got lots of churches to find because it's just amazing. I mean, Pisa is a really beautiful city, but if you're just here for the leaning tower, I mean, you can find leaning towers, and not only towers, huge buildings, like in Modena, the church be next to the tower.
Duomo.
The Duomo is also leaning.
Yeah.
Slightly, but it's leaning. So
it's really interesting that the architecture and like how these buildings have been here for hundreds of years. Yeah. It's amazing.
Maybe some for more than 1,000 years.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you have any classes in this building, but I have some classes in this building called the Fondazione San Carlo.
San Carlo, yes.
And there's one classroom in there which is just so beautiful. It's got like paintings on the roof, and it's got like these like theater style chairs, and that's like an unfathomable concept in the UK, or like anyone who's listening in from Durham knows Elbert Riverside and its squeaky chairs and squeaky doors. going from Elbert Riverside to the Aula Teatro, where you've got a giant painting just on the roof over you guys, and you're literally learning at the theatre. It's such a strange like flip. It's like such a strange 180.
Yeah, because I mean, it's the same thing in France. We don't have this kind of classrooms. I mean, in my university, the classrooms are almost, it feels like it's abandoned, it's derelict. The the chairs, the tables, the floor, the walls, the windows, everything is broken. Even the walls, you can find holes in walls. I mean, this is totally crazy when you think about it, because you feel abandoned when you arrive in this type of building. But here in Italy, they put so much effort in creating a safe and wonderful space of studying, because when you are even in the most basic classrooms, they're perfect, they're completely new, they
charging ports at every desk.
the best thing.
I wish
I had this in France, but you don't. We don't. That's a huge
The only building that I've ever seen back in Durham that has like charging ports at the desks and it's like a lecture theatre is the brand new building that was only opened in like 2020. Oh. And that's like a business school kind of building, like a business school. Oh. Like, no, language students don't get that.
No, we don't.
So you've come from France, you study English in France and you've come to Italy, but you've like when... Obviously, like when I'm talking to you and like when you're talking to other people in Erasmus events, you mainly speak in English. Do you think that you've learnt more English or like more colloquial English since coming here than you have in like your classes? Or how do you think your level of English is like compared to when you first came to Italy?
Yeah, definitely my level of English has really improved. First, because I never talked in English before. That much, because in France we speak with French people, so we speak French, definitely, obviously. But when I came here, I realized that if I wanted to be understood, I had to speak English all the time. And a lot of English speakers are studying English from the UK with the UK accent, with you, Charlotte, being English, British. So I had to speaking English with a British accent. But honestly, it has improved, obviously, but I feel much more comfortable talking to people in English than before, definitely.
How is it getting used to the like different English accents as someone who isn't from the UK? Like, what do you feel about like, the different UK accents? Are they easy to understand? Are they easy to distinguish? Do they sound different to you?
They're a bit different, honestly, but I really love the British accent because that's the accent I've been learning in school for years and years and years because the teachers don't want us to learn the American accent. They're
No American accent in my classroom.
They say like, oh, they're so, how do I say it? Lazy speakers, if I may say. I'm not the one who said this, but they are lazy according to my teachers. So we had to learn British English. And I really love speaking with a British accent, even though I've never been to England, which is a huge shame, but only in Scotland. Lovely, lovely country. But I can get used to hearing like and understanding the British accent because for me it's really easy, but for others it's not that easy. But I've also met some Irish people and that's more difficult to understand to me. Person.
They have a really lovely accent though. I love the Irish accent.
It's lovely, but it's complicated. Really complicated. I mean, for me, I'm not used to hearing this type of accent.
Mm. And can you give me an example of an English word or an English phrase that you've picked up from me and the other British girls here on Erasmus?
Oh, I've got one and it's really, really useful because we are in Erasmus. We tend to go to bars and restaurants and everything. Even tonight, we are going to have some drinks and dinner. So I've learned I'm hammered, which is really useful. And I think if I go to the UK next year, I will use it every time. But I like also the way you can just say, yeah, I'm tabled, I'm chaired. I just love that you have this possibility of saying anything and it means also the same thing. This is crazy.
You're,
I love it.
You're going to see, go to the UK, you're going to go to Spoons and you're going to get hammered. That's the plan.
I will get hammered, definitely.
Not going to the UK to learn English, just to go to Spoons and get hammered.
I will go to Spoons.
Do you have a French word that you can teach me?
Yeah, we've got this French word that is really popular, but I have no idea if it's popular in England or anywhere else. But it's... Félicitations, which means congratulations.
Félicitations.
It's a bit difficult, I mean, I think, for people to say it.
Félicitations.
Yeah, definitely. And when you write it, it's really long.
A lot of accents,
yeah. I mean, French is difficult, but this word, you can find it, it's useful because you can say it, like, in everyday life, and you can hear it on the radio, on the TV, you can find it in books. So, remember félicitations.
And do you have a French song that you'd recommend to me?
Oh, I have a biased opinion about French songs and music because for me it's like the best language For his songs. No, I'm sorry, but I love French music and French songs.
I mean, so do I. I had a show on Purple last year where all I would play is like music in French, music in Italian. French. So I'm in agreement
also,
with
yeah,
you.
Definitely
I'm in agreement
Italian.
With you.
But I would say like it's a bit generic, but Edith Piaf, maybe all of her songs. But me and Charlotte have a singer we like in common, which is Slimane.
We love Slimane.
We love Slimane. And he's got really, really good songs. And he has this duo with a singer named Vita.
Vita, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And they are so popular. I mean, every album they have released in the past 4 or 5 years, maybe.
Every song
has topped first in the charts in France and Belgium.
Literally, the perfect duo. Like, their voices go together
so well. They've won so many prizes and awards in France. Everyone knows them and their songs. They're really... Personally believe that their songs and Slimane songs, especially because I really like Slimane, are really, really
great. Not to be biased, but you guys should listen to Slimane.
You have to.
Life-changing.
And the lyrics and the language used is really, really good.
And it's easy to understand. So for anyone who's learning French back in the UK, any modern languages students, he's a really accessible artist to listen to and pick up French vocabulary and learn about how you can put words into sentences.
Definitely. The words are a bit basics, but some words are a bit difficult. But you put it in a sentence, in a song, you can understand the meaning. I mean, that's how I learned some English words.
That's why I love listening to music in different languages, because it just helps you to learn the language. It's just a fun, passive way for you to pick up new vocab and to...
And
just
to understand also the language.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I mean, if you understand, like, for me, when I started to understand musics and songs in English that are a bit complicated, I felt so proud of myself because it's not my mother language. I mean, I started studying English pretty late compared to the others. So this is a huge step for me, and I think for a lot of people who can understand English in music.
Yeah, amazing. And so thank you so much for chatting to me today, Teo.
Thank you for having me.
Do you have any advice to anyone listening?
Advice for...
Listeners who, like, just anything, just some words of encouragement, or...
You have to travel. You have to discover new countries, new cultures. I mean, I've never left France or rarely left France before. So this is like a revelation with myself. I truly found myself in another country, and you have to travel, not only in other countries, but I know in the UK you can find gorgeous places to visit. Just visit with your friends, your family, or even alone. I mean, traveling alone is also awesome, so just do it. Don't be ashamed if you're alone or if you're a bit shy. Whatever, who cares?
Amazing. Thank you so much,
Teo. You're welcome.
And we will see you guys again next week with another special guest speaker. Not sure who it is going to be yet, but we will see.
Purple Radio Podcasts.
Thanks for downloading this Purple Radio podcast. For more great content and to listen live, head to purpleradio.co.uk.